Welcome to the Living Life on Purpose podcast with your host, Michael Mukunda Chandra Cohan, the founder of YourWellnessYogi.com and the Living Life on Purpose community. The Living Life on Purpose podcast is a show dedicated to inspiring people to achieve their goals and live their dreams to the highest potential. Life is short. Learn to live it on purpose. Inside all of us is a powerful spark of the divine, and yet as life's challenges grind and wear us down, many of us forget that inner spark. However, that spark never leaves us, and if we stray too far from it, we will be unhappy in our life. At Your Wellness Yogi and the Living Life on Purpose community, we are dedicated to helping you discover that inner spark in life. We offer a variety of life coaching packages that meet your needs and budget. We have group coaching, monthly mindfulness mastermind calls, and one-to-one coaching. Get started today and take advantage of our two free personal one-to-one coaching conversations by taking the Circle of Life quiz, a free life assessment tool that helps you reveal the big picture of your true dreams and paves the road for real personalized action plan to take control of your life. Visit yourwellnessyogi.com/life. Before we get started, I wanted to ask you a favor, to write us an honest review of our podcast. By writing us a review, you will help raise our profile so more people can find us on iTunes. Visit yourwellnessyogi.com/podcast and click on subscribe to open up in iTunes and write us a review. You can also write us a review on your device as you listen to the show by opening up the podcast app. Thank you and enjoy this week's episode, and I appreciate you listening. I can't believe it's episode 177 of the Living Life on Purpose podcast. I never thought I would publish 177 episodes in about a year. One of the things I love about podcasting is you can't fake it. You can't Twitter buy followings. You can't Instagram boost followings. You can't boost Facebook post followings. You have to earn it. You have to work hard. You have to provide value, and you have to be real. This is why I love this medium. This is why I love podcasting. And this is why I'm so grateful for everyone that's listening. I really do appreciate it. Episode 177. Oh my God. This is just amazing. All right, enough with me talking about the 177th episode. Let me get on with this week's podcast guest. This week's podcast guest is with Ayana, who is a certified yoga teacher, a professional licensed social worker, a fitness instructor who helps clients unlock their potential and live life on purpose. This is a great episode. We talk all about yoga, spirituality, body, mind, movement, what it means to be an individual living a spiritual life, and how to find your true purpose and passion by living your truth. This is a great episode. I really do hope you enjoy it. And now let's get on with this week's episode. Perfect. I can say that properly. No worries.
No, it's okay.
So Ayana, thank you for being on the Living Life on Purpose podcast and show. I really do appreciate you being here, and I'm excited to have this conversation with you today. Before we get started, I want to ask you what your definition of living life on purpose is.
Oh, so I just think living life on purpose is living with intention and just feeling free and guiding yourself through joy and love and laughter.
Now, what I want to do is I want to get my audience to learn a little bit more about who you are. And yep. I want to know how you got sober, healthy, and free. What is your hero's journey here?
So I have quite a story. So I'm an alcoholic, even though I'm like a thousand other different things. That's part of my story. So I start with that. But I'm also a yoga teacher. I'm a dance teacher, a fitness enthusiast. I'm a mom of three. So I'm all those other things. However, I do have a journey that involved addiction. And the short story is, but I'll go into all of it, is that, I sort of freed myself from the addiction of alcohol through movement and mindfulness and yoga. So the way that I did that was, I was pretty much in the throes of addiction for a really long time. Like, I've had, you know, ups and downs with alcohol. But it really got bad probably about 3 years ago. You know, it kind of ebbed and flowed, but to the point where, you know, life was pretty unmanageable. I couldn't function. I couldn't be a mom. I couldn't sustain jobs. Like, you know, I couldn't do much. So I found myself, in rehab. And the first time was really like getting my mind free of alcohol. So, you know, I got out of there and then I just was kind of stuck and I couldn't figure out like where to go next. I just felt like I was like a zombie walking around the world. And I'd been like doing the different fitness stuff and it always really helped me. And I knew that that was something that, you know, was helping and was helping my body and my mind. And, but it was always so fast. Like I was a Zumba teacher, I was the dance teacher, I was like killing it at the gym. but I never ever learned how to slow my mind down. And so finally, after the first time I got sober, I was like, okay, let me try yoga. Cause I had tried it before and it was like, you can sit there, you know, and try and quiet your mind. But if your mind has like the monkey brain and it will not stop and everything horrible when you try to slow it down doesn't stop, yoga is really, really hard. So I finally was like, you know what, I gotta try it. So I did it like a lot. And then I went into yoga teacher training and, was like, I have to teach other people how to do this. I think unfortunately what happened was, you know, some stuff, teacher training's hard, you know, you have to really look at some personal issues in your life if you're really going to hold space for other people, which I think is super important. But I think for me, I had some really deep trauma that, you know, popped up, no fault of the, you know, training or the teachers or anything like that. It was just a personal journey. So I relapsed and had to go back. But it actually was the best experience of my life because I knew I'd gotten the alcohol out of my system enough to just be aware of my mind and my body and my spirit where I hadn't before. But I also knew that yoga was so important in terms of connecting the mind and the body. So I literally, for 28 days, sat on my yoga mat and just cried and got all the yucky stuff out of my body and literally like brought myself back to healing through breath. And then figured out that, and I wrote a ton during that time and just figured out that, other people need to know this. So long story is I'm a social worker. So I'm a licensed independent clinical social worker. So I did that for years and years and years. And I was kind of burnt out at that point too, sort of at the height of the addiction that was, you know, certainly a part of it. But then I was like, I have to figure out a way to combine both of these things. Cause the healing process really can't happen in my opinion, you know, sort of just through talking. It has to really be a connection with the mind, the body, and spirit, which was yoga for me. And I just figured, so I designed a model that was a coaching model and then a wellness practice with group fitness that certainly helped people figure out how to find, recover, and evolve was the design that I came up with. So my new wellness business is called Be Free. And I've been running that for about a year and a half. And here I am.
Here you are. That's the story. It's a good story. And here,
I'm sticking to it.
And like, here's what's interesting. And I'm going to be a little vulnerable to my audience. When I first started doing podcasts, it was maybe a year and a half ago. And I was on the phone with my yoga teacher. And I was on the phone with my mentor. And we were doing a sort of where are you now type of call with people that graduated from teacher training. And I told my teacher and my mentor that I just got interviewed on the Alcohol and Recovery Addiction podcast. And my teacher was like, why were you interviewed on that show? And I said, well, I was an alcoholic and a drug addict. And my teacher was like, wait, what? And I was like, yeah, you didn't know? And it came to this realization that nobody around me knew how much pain I was in. When I was in my early 30s, I got divorced and it was a really painful divorce because I felt like I made it somewhere in life. Like I got married, I had a good job in New York City. I was like kind of being really successful and there was identification of who I was supposed to be and my life crumbled around me. And I got really into yoga, but I got into this sort of very dogmatic form of yoga. and I felt very trapped within my yoga practice. And so I was doing drugs in the morning before I went to work, like pumping lines of cocaine or popping Adderall like it was candy, taking Adderall or cocaine for lunch, going to my yoga class in the evening, and then going home and popping Valium. Then on Friday nights, going to meditation class, and then after meditation, going out to drink and popping more Xanax or Valium. And then on the weekends, I would take more yoga and study, and I would go to spiritual classes on the Bhagavad Gita. And I felt very trapped. And then I met this individual who turned out to be my spiritual master, my guru. And part of the being initiated into the tradition I'm in is we're no longer allowed to have intoxicants. So we're not allowed to drink. We're not allowed to do drugs. We're supposed to maintain a vegan vegetarian diet. And I really wanted to get initiated because I wanted to be connected to my guru. So I had to quit drugs and I had to quit drinking. And I didn't know how to because I felt so trapped. And I came across Five Rhythms and Ecstatic Dance at the time. And no one knew I was going to these programs. I was going all by myself. I was going to Queens and I lived in Brooklyn and I wasn't telling people what I was doing because I felt like I was embarrassed because everybody looked at me on paper and was like, wow, this guy's very successful. He's healthy. He's good looking. He dresses right. And I just was in pain. And I just had to go work out that pain that was inside me that I felt like I couldn't share because I was being put into this like position of like, he's our ideal yoga student and he's our ideal aspiring devotee. And I just felt so dogmatic in my practice that when I found Five Rhythms, I was able to release this energy that was built up inside me that helped me stop doing drugs, maintain a healthy vegan vegetarian diet, stop drinking. And then 3 years later, I was able to, in a positive way, live by those standards that my teacher prescribed for me. And then I was eventually able to get initiated, became a life coach, became a yoga teacher. And now I do podcasting. And I find that that movement is one of the things that really helped me get there. And that's something you do, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I do a lot of dance stuff. I don't specifically do that class, but I do have a yoga class that I call that's I designed that's called R&B Soul Yoga. Mm-hmm. So it's very similar. So it has all the threads of it. So I use the similar asanas and all that, but there is dancing, there's movement, there's fluidity, there's laughter, there's talking. There isn't all your typical yoga background music. And I did that similar to the reason that you're talking about is that there needs to be, especially for people that don't know how to do yoga, more of a relaxed and open sort of environment in order to get used to it and get comfortable in it, especially for different body types as well. Some of those poses are super hard for different body types. Like vinyasas are not for everybody. And that's okay. Like it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be. And that's like not attaining yoga too. Like you don't have to sort of people. I feel like people get trapped in the, like, if I do vinyasas, I'm going to attain, you know, that's the goal here. If I can, I think that's just so silly because it's not necessarily about that. But I think this, just the thread of movement, like it's so inspiring to hear you just talk about your story actually. And all of that. Did you ever go to any like programs and it was like AA and all that?
No, I was a workaholic.
Yeah.
I was, you know, just trying to achieve, do, get that handstand in the middle of the room, get into that arm balance, get that deep back bend, find the answer. And I was just pushing myself and I was trying to live up to a standard that was not who I am. And I felt so rigid and so trapped I was in such pain. And I was going to Bhagavad Gita classes on Tuesdays and I was going to Yoga Sutra classes on Thursdays and meditation classes on Friday. And I was just like, something inside me is just still, there's this pain inside me and I need to get it out into the world. But if I share it with the people around me, they're going to judge me and I can't do that. So I had to find an escape. And I realized many years later, there was nothing wrong with me and there was nothing to be ashamed about. And it would probably been easier
to just say it.
To just say it, but I didn't. And if it wasn't for me pretending to be somebody I wasn't and going to another borough where nobody knew me and experiencing my yoga and experiencing my body in a way that I didn't feel judged was gave me the ability to kind of heal.
Yeah. So that was the first time I actually, because I did try to go to meetings and all that kind of stuff, but it didn't resonate for me. Like that, I'm very energy connected. So like even the feeling in the meetings, like the AA meetings weren't, it was so depressing, and all, and my body was taking away was the darkness of it. I wasn't, even though I could hear the hopeful stories, I wasn't integrating that into my body. My body was integrating the negative stories and the relapses and all that. Mm-hmm. But in yoga, I could actually, it was the first time of just like, I could not judge myself. And it was like, oh my God, I have the power in my own mind and body in this moment, like just in this moment, to not judge myself. And if I can build on that, then I will be okay. And it totally like it worked. Yeah. Like I'd still practice every day. I don't want to be like I'm healed, but I'm certainly light years from where I was in terms of like self-growth or understanding. Cause once you get to in the addiction stuff, it's so shameful. Like you do, like you think people are going to judge you, you know. For a while there, I'd be like, I wouldn't even be able to get it out of my mouth. Like, I was so worried about what other people were going to think. But now I write about it so much on purpose. Like, I put it out there on like social media, I write blogs, I'm writing a book. Like, I'm putting it out there just because to help with the shame around it. Like, other people, I'm like, you do not have to live so privately, and you can walk around the world like a freaking badass if you want to at the same time.
I find that a lot of times, and one of the things that my teacher told me after the fact, when I kind of shared what I was going through, my teacher said to me, you need to let it go. You need to mm-hmm. stop worrying about what other people think of you. You need to stop living up to the standards that you were told that you were supposed to be when you were a child. And you need to find your truth, your path, and not worry about it. And just surrender and just have faith that the universe is going to guide you and things are going to work out. You can do this. And that was just the release. But I had to leave. I had to leave New York City. I had to leave my friends. I had to start all over. Mm-hmm. And no one really understood. And to this day, not everybody really understands it because I've never really shared it with everybody. And I do a good job on these podcasts talking about it with people like you. But when it comes to like one-on-one, I don't, because, you know, we're not supposed to. We're supposed to be, you know, together and well and lead by example without having problems.
Right. I know. Like, that, so I do coaching too. Like, you do life, I do it too. And then sometimes people come in and I'm like, have to be honest. They're like, how's your day? I'm like, it's not good. And they're like, wait, what? Like, as if it's unconscionable that I would have a bad day because I do this type of work. I'm like, I'm still human. Oh my word. Just because I teach it doesn't mean I necessarily, you know, I mean, you live as much as you can the truth, you know, and what you're teaching. And I certainly practice what, you know, what I preach now, because I have to, just because, you know, in recovery, you have to take care of yourself. There's no, you know, if I don't, I will relapse. Like, that's just sort of the bottom line. So, you know, I have to take care of myself, but it doesn't mean I have bad days. It doesn't mean I'm going to go drink, but it doesn't mean like I'm not going to be grouchy.
I find that the best life coaches out there are ones who have life coaches, and the best, and that's what I say to everybody. I'm like, I have a life coach. I have problems. I'm working through them. I'm not perfect. I'm perfectly imperfect. And one of the things that I realized was, maybe like 2 years ago, that no matter who you are, whether you're the Dalai Lama or you're the Pope, or you're a great Swami, or or Rob Bell, any of these people out there that we look at and say, wow, they have the answers. They're so smart. There's something in their life that they're working on still. They're either having financial problems, or they're having problems with relationships, or they're having problems with the loss of a loved one. Then we all have this suffering. We all have these challenges that we have to go through in life. And the trick is how we deal with it. And I find it, that is the journey of the, you know, yogi, the practitioner, to be aware of our pain, to not ignore it, but to not live in it at the same time, and always try to find the solution to the problem and not dwell.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Becoming aware is almost like they say, the first step in Alcoholics Anonymous, just, you know, not to be in denial, but it's almost like the first step for anybody really is just becoming aware of the mind and the body and like where they're at in the moment. And it's like so similar to yoga or mindfulness coaching. It's just, can we become aware enough of like what's happening in the present moment to be able to respond in a way that's not like knee jerking or out of some other place that's from trauma or childhood or something that's not meant for that person. Or, you know, it's like, can we become aware enough? Like, that's honestly half, I feel like half the coaching sessions are like, let's become aware and then let's take a breath and pause and then respond.
Now, where do you think the beginning of awareness comes from? That when we're like most people and we're sort of on this autopilot where we wake up, go to work, we come home, we eat dinner. If we have kids, we take care of our kids, we watch a little TV, we pass out, get up, go to work, rinse, lather, repeat, Friday night, we order pizza, watch a movie, wake up Saturday, run around doing errands all day, same thing Saturday night. If we have a life partner, maybe we make love, wake up Sunday, go do our spiritual thing, run around, get ready for the week again. And then how do we begin to wake up and how do we begin to slow down?
Yeah. So I mean, it's so important. I think that's a hard thing to teach. I think what ends up happening is people come to coaching to me when something has happened that has sort of triggered that in some way. So I'm dealing right now, ironically, with like three people that have come to me with like chronic pain in different parts of their body. And it could be from a past injury. It could be from emotional stuff. You know, it's all these things. It could be, but it's not necessarily... none of them can sort of pinpoint it. But it clearly seems to me that it's emotionally connected and then emotionally, you know, surrounded by either a past trauma or stuff that just people haven't let go of and that really the pain body has taken over. And so to release some of that is just sort of where the work is. So sometimes it's hard to teach people that. It's more, I'm finding that something has awakened them or like an event, like a divorce or something has shifted so much or the universe, like, I don't know if you are, but I'm a huge believer in like, you know, the universe is going to show you the path no matter which way you go.
Like, you have no choice.
Yeah, no, you're going to have to get there, right? So it's the universe either, you know, will halt you if there's, you know, so you're not getting the message. And I think that's happened to certainly a couple of people that I've worked with. I'm like, you know, you've either been in a car accident how many times, or how many times, you know, where, and it's like in the unit or somebody, you know, that again, like you're like workaholic and then all of a sudden something happens that doesn't allow them to work anymore. So they have to slow down. So I think it's allowing that experience to show itself and really taking a clear look at, you know, what is the message? What are we trying to heal? What is the message that the body and the mind need to accept in order to move on in the way that you're meant to move on for you? You know, and some people don't get it. They'll never stop. And that's okay. That's just their path. Yeah, I think it's a lot just having, you know, being open. And some people will, what also happens is I'll have that conversation with somebody who they know they want to change, but they're just not ready. And that's like totally fine. And then, you know, 3 months later, something will shift and they'll be like, oh, that's what she was talking about. And I'll get a phone call and they'll be like, so can I come back? So it's just a lot about timing and the energy in the universe and how that kind of plays itself out.
I wanted to take a quick break and remind you that it is never too late to make a choice and decide to make lasting changes in your life and create the life you want and learn to live life on purpose. At Your Wellness Yogi and the Living Life on Purpose community, we are dedicated to helping you discover that spark in life. We offer a variety of life coaching packages that meet your needs and budget. We have group coaching, monthly mindfulness mastermind calls, and one-to-one coaching. Get started today and take advantage of our two free personal one-to-one coaching conversations by taking the Circle Life Quiz, our free life assessment tool that helps you reveal the big picture of your true dreams and paves the road for a real personalized action plan to take control of your life. Visit yourwellnessyogi.com/life. So the universe is telling us that we're living this imbalanced life, and we continue to ignore it to the point that something happens where we begin to come unbalanced. We either get disease or an injury, or we have a breakup in the family, or some sort of like dark night of the soul happens. How do we get through? How do we get well? I know one of the things that you do is getting well through movement and mindfulness and fun.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that a little bit.
So, fun, I don't see how anyone can, this is aside, fitness instructor, how people move their bodies without having fun. Like I always say, if you know, the endorphins are just so key, but so I teach a fitness class called Pound, and it's a cardio fit class using drumsticks. So literally the whole time you're like beating a mat, you're screaming, you're dancing, you're lunging, you're squatting. And there's not been one day I've had some pretty difficult stuff happen in my life, and there's not one day I've taught Pound or taken a Pound class and haven't walked out like extremely happy, or at least felt like I released a lot of stuff from my body. So that's just one example in terms of, connecting that to the release as well. Like you can pound a mat, but if you are really, really in the moment, so if you can teach people how to move their bodies and stay in the moment, similar to yoga, because when you're teaching yoga, you're walking through, you know, be in the moment, use your breath, but you can actually do that in other fitness classes as well. So if you're pounding, like I'll use language that I use in yoga of be in this moment or picture this, or, you know, and so that the issues are actually moving through their body as opposed to just, you know, doing a fitness class or a movement class. So that's sort of how I infuse all of it. And I do a pretty good stretch at the end of any yoga, any fitness class as well, which, you know, the people that quote hate yoga, you know, you sneak it in and they're like, oh my God, that was the best stretch ever. Yeah, you think? It's because they use their breath necessarily, not because they did the stretches right. So yeah, I just think the movement piece is just such a connection to joy and leading your life like you on this podcast of just on purpose. You can lead your life on purpose with joy. I mean, you can choose it.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, why do you think yoga has become so popular in Western culture versus other exercises? It is everywhere. And I know that people hear this all the time, but it's not slowing down. It is continuing to expand, evolve, and get more and more popular. Unlike other forms of exercise, that they come, they go. You know, CrossFit was all the rage, and now, you know, people still do CrossFit, but most people don't really do CrossFit anymore. They do other forms of exercise, and, you know, it used to be aerobics, and then aerobics came and went, then it was Tai Bo, jazzercise, but yet yoga jazzercise, yes. Yeah. Yoga is still around, and it's still popular, and it's getting more and more popular. It's everywhere. How many yoga clothing stores are in the mall?
It's disgusting. I know. Yeah. My opinion on this isn't really popular or nice, so I don't know if that's okay. But
Sure. No worries. I mean,
a lot of it is media, and people are buying into this culture of thinness and whiteness and yoga clothes and all the stuff that you can afford and buying into the mindfulness, but not true mindfulness. They're buying into the fad of what they think it should be and how they think they should live their life.
Right.
And that's really what it's based on. And, you know, that kind of fad, once it takes on, is hard to let go of, because then the media goes, you know, how things all go in waves of what's popular, right? So that it hits one and then it hits another. And then, good news is it's becoming much more popular in communities of color.
Agreed.
Which is nice to see. It hasn't hit as much as you would like. And part of that is just affordability. Because it's so expensive. I mean, it's a high-end practice. I make it as affordable as possible. And I have a scholarship program. You know, no one's ever going to get turned away from my program. But Yeah, that is a lot of it. And people sort of get tunneled vision. And some people just, you know, they want to hang on to something that they think is true. So, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily have the background, or if they weren't doing this, like, yoga isn't to get fit. Like, I don't know where that whole thing came from. Like, it's not a fitness class. It's not to get your thighs and your bum cute. Like, it's just not.
Well, that's the byproduct. Like, practicing yoga is going to give you physical benefits. You're going to lose weight, of course, because you're moving your body. You're going to get better cardiovascular circulation because the sun salutations provide an opening up the seven channels of the chakras. So you're going to have good blood flow. You're going to want to eat healthier because in your yoga practice, you're going to want to feel better in your body, and eating lighter foods and eating clean makes you feel good. So you're going to want to do that. But these are all the sort of, like, you know, byproducts of the practice. They're not the goal of yoga. And I do agree with you that yoga has been culturally appropriated in the West, where it's all about kind of this having this sort of look that you're this, you know, affluent, successful person in these really expensive yoga clothes, drinking your, you know, sitting on your $250 yoga mat, drinking your $10 tea, wearing your $200 mala necklace, and it's, you know, $400 a night health spa is the goal of yoga. And I was always taught that yoga is an introspective spiritual practice to connect to the soul.
Exactly. Yep. That's it. It's so simple. It's so simple. And it just drives me nuts when people are like, oh, look at her. She's such a yoga body. And I'm like, oh, like, it kills my insides. Like, what does that even mean?
Well, you know, I think we'll get into this real quick. I think we as yoga teachers 5 years ago, 10 years ago, we were like, oh, adding yoga is good yoga. As long as people get the experience of yoga. And we were just so jazzed about people experiencing it that we didn't care.
Yeah.
And now as teachers, we have to begin to have this conversation. Well, what is it that makes it
right?
Like, and Pitaba Joyce was like, I remember reading, you ever read the book Guruji by Pitaba Joyce?
No.
So, Pitaba Joyce is like the grandfather of yoga in America, right? Like, you know, the father, one of the guys, the source, right? Yes. When he was teaching yoga to a bunch of Americans, they took him to the circus and they were doing a bunch of like yoga exercises at the circus. And his student said, look, Guruji, they're doing yoga. And Guruji looked at him and said, no, they're not. That's not yoga. Where's the intention? What's the purpose? They're just doing exercise. That's not yoga.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's the conversation that as teachers, as stewards of this practice, we need to begin to kind of have that conversation of what makes it yoga. Because there are teaching methods that don't really focus on the spiritual side of yoga. Like, mm-hmm. In terms of, like, you know, the soul connection, they focus more on the mind and body connection. Mm-hmm. And that's a form of yoga. So yoga is not able to be fit into a box. But then again, we also have to be able to be like, this is the standard that we aspire for in our yoga as teachers.
Right. And I think that setting that tone in the beginning of, you know, so it's not unclear sort of where you're coming from as a teacher, because I feel like a lot of people are just looking at yoga teachers too like they're just this like god of person that's like, but they're not. They're just they're just human, and you know, there is no perfect pose, even though sometimes I've been in classes where there's so much description of the pose. And you feel like you're doing it wrong if you're not exactly in that pose, and your mind's already gone. Like, you're already out of the element of the space that you should be in terms of just connecting with the mind, the body, and the spirit, and all that kind of stuff. Alignment is important. Safety is important. I'm not knocking any of that. you know, but there is a difference, you know. So I sort of, you know, I outline that in the beginning of my classes and just allow it to be very open. So I have people that have never done yoga before. And then I have like people that are high end doing, you know, handstands and all that kind of stuff. And they'll know, you know, that but they're still doing their own practice because of leading a sort of a high, you know, a high level class, but they're doing their own thing because they have that skill level, you know, right. I think it depends on sort of what you also put out there in terms of being human and a yoga teacher at the same time.
Being perfectly imperfect.
Yes, that too.
So you wrote a book. Tell me about your book.
Well, it's not done yet. Oh my goodness. It's on its way to coming out at some point in time. It's called Becoming Free. So it's a memoir. It's a story of addiction, adoption, recovery, and yoga. So it's a story. So my mom died about 10 years ago, and she was a very, you know, sad soul in terms of she was an addict. She was homeless. She was, you know, she never was able to get healthy. She did sort of in the last couple of years of her right before she died, but she, you know, she hated AA and all that. And then, so she passed away. And I adopted my daughter through the state of the Department of Children and Families.
Wow.
So I have a 7-year-old daughter. And there was some dynamic there that happened in terms of adopting her and then my mom passing away that brought up some really crazy trauma. And so the book really is about outlining sort of my life as a child growing up with this alcoholic mom, sort of where the abandonment issues were and all of that, some of which were healed, but a lot that were not. And then adopting my daughter and like, so almost like having PTSD of when I was that age that we adopted her at, all those memories sort of came flooding back. And so it's sort of how, then I had my addiction and then how I healed myself through, you know, learning mindfulness and movement and taking care of myself and loving my daughter and letting go of my mother and then becoming a person that's sort of healthy and free in the world and now helping other people to do the same.
Now, in your experience of addiction, pain, suffering, do you find a lot of the problem is people are unable to let go and that's why they continue the cycle?
I think what's happening is yeah, they're not able to. It's really hard to go back and look at some of that trauma.
Yeah.
But it's also, it's hard to let go, but there isn't anyone really to teach people how to do that, which was also sort of why I started the Be Free program, because I was finding in Alcoholics Anonymous that, you know, if they're like, you have to go to a meeting, you have to get a sponsor, and if you don't do those things, you're going to relapse. If you don't do those things, you're going to die. Right. And so it was like the self-fulfilling prophecy of like, you ask why you relapse, the person's first thing out of their mouth is, oh, I got away from the program. And I'm like, no, you got away from you. Like, what? Like, no. But it's so true. There's like, if you know, even if you reach your sponsor, like we need to teach people how to have those tools internally of how to deal with that trigger, you know, how to deal with when something bad happens the first time in sobriety. Like walk them through how to breathe, walk them through crying, but knowing that that crying is not going to last. Like that, it's a moment. It's not forever. Even though it feels in the beginning of sobriety that like when something bad happens, like your whole life is over. Like I get it. It makes so much sense. But if we don't teach people those types of things and then how to manage it with mindfulness, you know, of course you're going to relapse. Of course you're going to reach for something else. There's no other way. It feels like you're trapped.
Mm-hmm.
I used the word trapped before. It's like when you feel that way, that's when people really, when they use. So yeah, I think it's hanging on to, you know, old stuff, or it's just like you talked about before, it's hard to be aware. Like it's sometimes it takes people so long to relapse to really get to what the issue is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to finally like become aware that, oh, wait a second, like, or to identify what happened, or to identify that, like, you know what, I am powerful enough to do this. Because it's so shaming that it's the cycle is so hard to get out of that you, unless you really make the connection of I choose, like I tell people all the time, they're like, how'd you get sober? I'm like, I chose me. I chose me over that bottle of Chardonnay. I chose, and if you look at it like that, like it's so connected to you, it's not outside of you, it becomes sort of a different way to heal.
Yeah, I always like let people know, I'm like, there's nothing wrong with you. You're fine.
No. Yeah.
You're fine. Like, you're in pain. You're suffering. You're challenged. There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong. It's just, it's learning why you do it. That's the, that's what mindfulness is. It's not you being in the present moment. That's great. And it's really powerful to be in the present moment, but it's also learning why you do something and then coming up with the solution. You can talk about your problems forever, but if you don't understand why you have those problems and why you make the decision, who cares about knowing that you have them?
Right. Or like sometimes I tell people just the why is sometimes doesn't matter. Like if this is a problem that you know has been a problem and you've looked at it 1,000 times, then it's time to really just start to let it go. So instead of digging back, I'll do some of the stuff with people of let's just replace the memory with something positive and let's integrate that into your body. So it's like every time you think of this, you know, let's meditate on it and let's breathe. Let's go through this and recreate that, you know, a positive connection. So sometimes what works really well with people is, you know, if someone was parentified as a kid, you know, and they never got to play, like I will say to them, you know, they can always take my classes for free when they're in the coaching program. Like when you're in Pound, I want you to, you know, act silly. Or when you're in Zumba, I want you to dance like you were when you were 5 and like be in that moment. And just really let everything else go in that class for 60 minutes and then write about it when you get home. And then we'll talk about it. And so then they can, I was like, okay, now that you've integrated that feeling, so now you know what it feels like. Because some people just don't know what that feels like. If you've had those experiences or what happiness feels like, you know, if you've been, you know, have some heavy stuff happen to you. How to reintegrate some of just the positive stuff into the muscles, even, you know, issues are in your tissues. Nikki Myers always talks about that, you know, if the issues are really, really, you know, in your tissues, like how do you get them physically out then? So I think that's the journey.
I find it's interesting and it's at the same time, a little sad. I find that most people think that whatever problems they have, they're the only ones that are dealing with it. Like everybody looks around and says, I'm the only one with these problems. No one else is going through what I'm going through. And unless you have a real life issue, you're going through the same problems that I went through, that everybody else went through.
Yeah. Yeah. And everyone's recovering from something. And it's all very similar in terms of the recovery.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the pain, all of it is very similar. People don't know that. That's so funny. Cause I was teaching yoga the other day and it was my R&B soul yoga class. It wasn't recovery yoga, which is the next day. Mm-hmm. And I look around, you know, and everyone's like crying in Shavasana. And I realize, you know, that out of like 25 people, half of them are in recovery and they've all told me separately and think that nobody else knows. I was like, that's crazy.
That was the pain that I went through.
But so cool at the same time. I'm like, wow, that's amazing.
Right. And I think one of the ways to heal is to recognize that your problems are no different than anybody else's. That, you know, that you have the same struggles that I do. They look a little different, but none of us are perfect. And we got to get over this belief that we all have to be perfect, that we all have to have the answers, because that's just not going to happen.
Mm-mm. No. And it's much more freeing to live life knowing that you're never going to be perfect.
Right. Now, we're running out of time. I want to know where everybody can find you. How can everybody find you if they want to work with you?
So my business is in Cape Cod and Yarmouth, but I have a website. It's befreewell.com. Mm-hmm. So single B, BFREEWELL.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Be Free Coaching and Wellness, and I'm all over social media. You can just type in Be Free Coaching and Wellness. It just pops up on Facebook. It's Be Free Well on Instagram. And I'm Ayana at befreewell.com.
And we'll have that in the show notes for everyone.
Okay, cool. Great. Awesome.
So any last minute words of advice that you can give our audience before we finish the show?
Oh my gosh. Just that I feel like, well, first of all, it was really nice talking to you.
Yeah.
That was great. I love talking yoga with other people. and just that for those people who are in recovery or struggling with anything, that just I want people to know that there really is a way out. There really is a life out there that's possible to live that feels free and doesn't feel stuck and feels manageable, and healing is so possible and recovery is possible. Even if people have relapsed a gazillion times, life is not over.
Thank you for listening to the Living Life on Purpose podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please subscribe to our show in iTunes and write us a review. By writing us a review, you will help raise our profile so more people can find us on iTunes. Links to our sponsors and other tools can be found in our show notes, along with other useful information. For more information on our yoga and coaching classes, please visit our website at yourwellnessyogi.com and please sign up for our newsletter. Life is short. Learn to live it on purpose.